density, making extremely fine dust. I was glad to hear you were wearing goggles and a face mask. But still now, how fine was that dust? Could it get through the face mask? Were you ingesting lead particles? And that's something to worry about. You were vaporizing and making extremely fine lead dust, which doesn't sound safe. I don't know if it's as bad as asbestos, but I'll bet you whenever they have to remove lead paint from a structure, the EPA now dictates an extremely stringent procedure to control where the lead flakes and the lead dust goes. So I think you've indicated a procedure, although it's fast, I think it's strongly recommended no one do that. Let's see if Eric's got some opinion on this one. KE2EJ, I wonder if you heard anything along these lines, Eric. K2LIW on the TechNet. Okay, maybe Eric has been called away. I'm glad you brought this to our attention, and I think it's something that we should not recommend anyone do. To unsolder the parts is a lot slower process, but it's a hell of a lot safer. To grind them away when you've got lead-bearing solder, and you're making this very fine dust with these very fine grit wheels running at high velocity, and you're both vaporizing some of that material and breathing that, I don't think there's a face mask that's fine enough to stop that from being ingested into your lungs. Did you feel any ill effects during the time you were doing that work, Paul? WS2N, K2LIW?
I'm back. Back here, Eric. No, none whatsoever, right, Dick. But, first of all, I started off with the Dremel tool, and I thought that was good. But then I grabbed one of these side wheel grinders. This is, it's got a 4-inch disc on it. It's a big, I guess a third of a horsepower thing. That spins. It's got a handle. You put a handle on the side, and you grab a hold of this thing. It's nothing but a grinding machine that's handheld. I'm sure you know what I mean, Dick. That was the fine. The little Dremel tool, not bad. Now after doing this, I don't even recommend that. But it was when I used this big grinding wheel, I said, wow, you're looking at it, you're on top of it. You say, oh, this is great. Then you realize what you did. This is bad news. So no ill effects. I think it was just like I said, 5 minutes worth, but enough to make you think. You wouldn't. Ball stop. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, even that side wheel grinder has got some very high velocity to it, which I think is capable of making some very fine dust. I know that the EPA has got some very strict rules about removing lead-based paint from, say, a bridge or a building. And so, and you were delving into that area. Eric, KE2EJ?
Yeah. If you're going to be grinding that stuff, don't let the EPA catch it. You really should be using some kind of a hood. You could just put a box over your grinder and hook it up to a vacuum cleaner and pipe it out the door. You don't want to be breathing that stuff, that's for sure. And you can get a glass respirator. It's what people use when they make stained glass projects and things like that. It's pretty fine particles, but not only the lead, but the fiberglass content, the resins that's made out of. You don't really want to be coating your lungs with it. You may not sense it, but and then, of course, there's the beryllium oxide type devices that you really want to stay away from. But, today's soldering stations actually come with a vacuum tip to suck all the vapors away, too. That's how fussy they're getting. And, of course, you get solder that has no lead in it. So, K2RW, K2J.
Do you remember...
K2LUQ.
LYQ, we'll get to you in a second. Do you remember in our youth, Eric, how the first time you watched somebody soldering, you saw the smoke of the soldering iron go up into the guy's face, and he ignored it, and he was breathing those fumes? And the first time I saw that, I thought, gee, how in the world can that person tolerate it? Pretty soon I realized that lots of people doing soldering don't even know that those fumes are coming up into their face. And nowadays, I'm pretty sure that's not considered safe. What do you think, Eric?
Well, you're obviously talking about, the Well, I was a very starter. They can get pretty smoky. The new stuff, I like the water-soluble flux. It's not as smoky, but still you want to, you know, suck it away. And the beauty of it is when you finish soldering, you just rinse the board off in warm water and dry it off, and it's very pretty.
Yeah, over the years, I've used various kinds of rosin dissolving materials. And sometimes I was washing a number of boards and getting a strong concentration into a small room. And I remember on one occasion walking out of that room pretty woozy. And I'm pretty sure that wasn't a safe thing to do. Thank goodness I wasn't using carbon tetrachloride, which I think is quite carcinogenic. Who's the person who just signed in? Start off with your call letters and then your name, and then proceed. K2LAW. My name is Dick.
Let's see if I have it. KC2LUQ, right?
You've got it.
Okay. I wanted to bring to light that you can get your lead levels and other heavy metal levels checked by a simple blood test. Dr. Waters said most insurance companies will pay. It's not a very expensive test. Being familiar with firing ranges, the fellas that have been spent a number of years at as the firearms instructors, lately, they're starting to check their lead levels and finding them to be elevated. So that's just something to keep in mind there. Roger, KC2LUQ, back to me.
And Rich, are you saying that these firing ranges are indoors and there's a strong lead concentration in the air? Or is this even occurring on outdoor antenna ranges? Over to you, Rich.
It's occurring on outdoor ranges. I am familiar with that. Friends of mine found who had been exposed for a few years to that. Not necessarily even, you know, trying to stay away from the fumes, as they always did. In fact, one of them is, actually one of them is pretty sick right now. I'm not even sure if he's still with us. But he got a throat cancer from, it's possible that it's related to this. I'm really not 100% sure. But I know that they had their lead levels checked, and they were very high there. And yes, to answer your question, it is that we're talking about outdoor ranges.
Wow. With the air blowing outdoors where you think you're in a clean environment, that's amazing to me. But I guess the rifling of a gun is peeling away chunks of lead that are coming out at high velocity and high temperatures when you fire a firearm, and all that's being put into the air. And so I think you're saying there is strong reason to believe that the high lead content of the person's blood supply was due to his exposure from that occupation or that particular hobby of firearms. I wonder if there's a chance the person had any other kind of lead exposure, like removing lead-based paints, or one of the things that scares the daylights out of me is that I've heard stories of young children who years ago used to think that solder is a nice soft material and it's fun to chew on it. That scares me. And there are people who used to live in housing that had old-fashioned lead-based paint that would be peeling off the wall, and children would get great pleasure out of eating those paint chips. Again, a very dangerous sounding procedure. Anybody with any further comments on any of the above, give me your call letters in right now. K2LAW.
2EO, Greg A. White.
Okay, Rich and Mel in that order. N2EO, go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Greg. You know, I wonder if some of this with lead is maybe a little overstated, because I did all the things that you shouldn't do with solder. I was one of those kids when I was about 12 years old, 11 years old, 10 years old, because I started playing with radio early. I used to put wads of solder in my mouth as a child and chew on it. And I worked every day. I'm 58 years old. I worked every day with a soldering iron. Probably if anybody should have elevated levels of lead, it should be me. And I recently, within the last month, had a blood test from my physician for lead levels. Everything was normal, so go figure things.
Glad to hear that. Either you didn't really get exposed, even though you think you did, or your body is very good at disposing of the excess lead. I'm glad to hear that it's normal. Mel, K2KEY.
This is K2KEY. Well, to make things even worse, people those days, not only did, you know, why did smoke from the iron didn't bother them, but they were smoking a cigarette at the same time. And I'm not joking, really, what really took place, because I know of a lady that passed away. Worked on the assembly line out here in Lyon City, soldering all day long. They were putting together intercoms. And she got cancer, throat cancer, and lung cancer, or whatever. And it seemed like the vast majority of people that she worked with for many, many years, you know, all sitting around, mostly all women, sat around this big table passing this item from one to the other. Each one had a certain specific soldering job. They all, well, not all, but let's put it this way, a very high majority of them all got throat cancer and lung cancer and passed on sick. So it was definitely a situation that exposure. But the point is that these people also were heavy smokers. They smoked cigarettes. So how much one contributed to this situation the other didn't, I have no idea, over.
And there's lots of evidence that cigarette smoking is an extremely destructive process. It's hard to believe that the total area of all of those little bitty air sacs inside of a human lung, the total area is approximately the area of a single tennis court. And you take that amount of area, which has a one cell thickness between the blood and air barrier, by which it passes a carbon dioxide in one direction and oxygen in the other direction, a very delicate organ, and you take all of the tremendous numbers of organic chemicals, many of them carcinogenic, that exist in cigarette smoke, and smear it over that lung material day after day, and you expect the body to keep repairing that damage. And that's an extremely dangerous experiment. I'm amazed at that particular hobby that people had, which is an extremely addictive hobby, persisted for such a long period of time, and for such a long period of time it was considered socially acceptable. Really amazing to me the amount of damage that created. Awful glad that we finally come around to accepting the fact that it's not the thing to do, and even secondary smoke is considered pretty dangerous. I think, Mel, we should go to your mailbag, because I know we haven't been doing it justice for some time. And I hope you've gotten some nice, interesting mails this week. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, this is K2KEY. Yeah, I got nice questions here all the time. I try to answer some of them. Yeah, that was it. Hey, you talk about secondary smoke. It came from a house where everybody smoked. Doctor once asked me if I ever smoked cigarettes. I said, well, not actually, but I guess I smoked a million of them, but never held one. A facetious joke, but that's the truth. I'm just looking through here. Oh, okay. I got a lot of these. You know, we start up a little bit of problems here with people trying to put up antennas in situations where they're living in buildings all around the metropolitan area, and I've been getting a load of these questions about how to possibly give them a way of installing an antenna that they can try out HF radio, and yet the antenna is, you know, more or less hidden from view of the people that that run the building or whatever, you know. And the question seems to come down to what size wire, and this is something we didn't discuss really, what size wire can I possibly use if, say, I want to run a moderately up to, say, 100 watts, and what color wire is the hottest for a human eye to see, say, from ground level? Now, how do you answer that one, Vic? Over.
Yeah, I own a book on stealth antenna installations for HF operation. I don't know the full name of the book, but I'll find it in my bookshelf maybe later on tonight or for next week. That'll help a little bit. I've talked to people who have used 30-gauge wire, but I think that's pushing it too far. I think 24-gauge enameled wire, brown enameled wire, is heavy enough to easily take 100 watts at most of the frequencies we're talking about. And because of its color and its diameter, I think it's reasonably invisible. Brown enameled 24-gauge is one of my recommendations. And maybe you could even go as thick as 18-gauge before people will see it. In your case, you've got the green enameled wire in your green tree out in front of your house, which no one can see. So, and I know you were rather lucky to find a source of green wire, which I think is a little bit on the rare side. Back to you, Mel.
Oh, quite easy to find. It's the third leg used in pulling through a conduit. They used a green wire. That's the third, the ground leg. So no problem finding that, a roll of that. And, well, this is number, mine is, of course, is number 12 wire. So it's, you know, kind of heavy. I don't think you would put that outside of a building. I would say that if you have, I was going to say if you had red brick, if the building had red brick, using maybe number 22 wire, which is a standard size, in red, maybe that would be more of an advantage, Dick, because against the red brick, I don't think you'd see it, over.
Yeah, but so-called red brick is not really red, particularly after it's been weathered for a while. I think it gets closer to brown. So the brown enameled wire, which one would be more invisible, brown or red? Try them both and make a judgment. It's more of a function of the amount of weathering and the coloring of your particular bricks. But one of the things to remember is that we amateurs know to look for wire. We like to look around houses to find out, does a radio amateur live there? And we look on the roof and see if there's any antennas. The vast majority of people never even look at a roof and never would see wire. You can do an experiment. Of all the people who you know very well, who visit you every Friday night, so to speak, and you have a canaster game with them, or you play poker with them, or whatever, you ask them, what is the color of the shingles on the roof of your house? And I think they will not be able to answer that question. They've never looked at the roof of your house. So, an awful lot of wire that we amateurs put up. We see it, we think it's very obvious. To the majority of the population, it's not. So making an antenna invisible, in my opinion, is not too difficult. Back to you, Mel, KQRIW.
Hey, Dick, WS2N.
Go ahead, Paul. How have you made an antenna invisible?
Okay, I don't have any red brick here, but I mean, as far as the sky is concerned, I use gray wire. It's, you know, gray insulated wire. And like Mel, it's number 12. I've used it for 80 and 20. That's my most popular dipoles. And, you know, halfway up the dipoles. And, you know, I put it up. I can't even see it. I mean, I have to look for it. And, you know, if there's a storm or something coming by, I've got to look to see if that thing blew down. You know, you just can't see the color. It's unbelievable. Against brick, I don't know. I mean, you know, I guess maybe that would show. But out in the open, wow. It's unbelievable, and it's thick. It's 12. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, some guys want to make it much more invisible, and therefore they're going to use smaller diameter wire. Mel thinks 22, I think around 24, somewhere around there, is physically strong enough for most bands, as long as you're not trying to hold up a very heavy coax cable at the center, and there's ways of supporting the coax. So, there are also ways of hiding the antenna inside of flagpoles, trees, downspouts, and so on. And some of those are the techniques that are in the stealth antenna book. You can actually make the downspout tubing of the rain gutter itself into an antenna. And people have done that. So there's all kinds of ways of hiding the antenna. The wiring in your house, the conduit tubing itself that's buried in the wall can be made into an antenna. With a little bit of spots. Back to you, Mel. KQLIW.
Hey, this is KQKEY. Well, this person, what they're referring to, I know the situation. They are living in one of the high rises here, these co-ops. and they're pretty strict. We happen to own a co-op, we're letting one of our aunts live there now. She's an older lady, had to have some place to live because the neighborhood she was previously in had sort of gone down to a very bad situation and unsafe, so we let her stay there. And was actually just a co-op that we happened to inherit, but we were going to get rid of it, so we still got it. And you'd be amazed how they are scanning, looking at the patio, decks that are that each one of these apartments have. Well, not all of them, but quite a number of them have these little decks. These little pieces of things that come out, porches that come out of the apartment. And people were doing a lot of things on there, including putting antennas of some sort, whether they were CB operators and things like that, and they have gone really to the point where they are using spotting scopes and looking over individuals to see what they have, actually looking up and down the building. And let me let it drop. And in one case, one of the local hams here had made up one of those antennas, like I had mentioned, that he took a plastic tube and wound a number of turns of coil and had it laying basically on the windowsill. And it was spotted and was told that you better remove it or he's going to have to stand before the board. So it is a very bad problem with, having to try to get on HF in its restriction like that. And I've had a tremendous number of inquiries of any ideas that we could possibly give them, even though I think we sort of covered this previously, over.
WB2HWW, a question. A little bit noisy, but go ahead, Howie.
And now, was this inside or outside the building?
I'm pretty sure that these guys are trying to put antennas outside the building. Is that true, Mel?
Most definitely. There's no way you're going to do anything inside these buildings. These buildings are all, got steel and metal lats and all kinds of fireproof buildings, most of them. So they are pretty good shields. I know, for instance, the condo that we have, you can literally almost get no reception on a TV set with an indoor antenna stick over.
Go ahead, Howie.
By the way, there's a big thing going on now
noisy, Howie. I'm wearing earphones and I'm able to just barely pick out your audio above the noise. And I know you're asking questions about inside or outside, and Mel was saying that the rabbit ears, and he's pretty close to Empire State Building, in these metal buildings, rabbit ears don't give very good reception. So putting an antenna inside that building and trying to get good reception is going to be quite challenging. Not impossible. And if you're really smart, there may be ways of lighting up the steel girders of the building itself. A few smart amateurs have done that. It turns out just about every chunk of metal, regardless of its size, there's usually some kind of a way you can cause it to act like an antenna. Very similar to what some guys do with a sloper. The radio tower itself, at times, can be converted into an antenna, even though one end of it is thoroughly grounded. And maybe we have actually increased the grounding structure in order to make it act better. So it's a challenge. When you've got a housing association and or landlord that is specifically looking for antennas and forcing you to eliminate them, life gets pretty tough. And what a challenge to use a flagpole, a downspout, the conduit tubing in the building, the steel girders of the building itself, to try to convert one of those into an antenna. It's all doable, I didn't say it's easy. K2KEY, K2RIW.
EC2QIQ.
Let's see what Glenn's got to say. Wonder if you've got some buddies that have run very difficult antenna installations. Go ahead, Glenn.
I have a better signal now.
Sorry, I just didn't want to step on Howie. Howie, I can hear you, but I still think you have noise in your signal. But a suggestion from Mel is that, you know, sometimes, especially if you're in a high enough story in an apartment building, is to have an antenna that you can wind up, you can actually roll it back up again and then drop it back down. Something I did when I used to visit my grandma's apartment back in the 70s was to take a 5-ounce shipping weight and put it at the bottom of like a 22-gauge wire and have a spool and just roll it out to a resonant length and then have a clip lead on one side and the other side go to an antenna tuner. And if, when your transmission is done, roll it back up again and bring it back inside. So it's not there all the time. KC2, QIQ. WB2H,
W. Do I have a signal now, Dick?
You're a little bit more copyable now, Howie. Go ahead.
Question I was asking Mel. You were talking about this person with a roll-up antenna with a coil. Was that inside or outside the apartment where they told him to take it down? Was that in his window or outside the window, Mel?
Hey, it was outside on the windowsill, Howie. They took a paper, plastic tube. Oh, I guess it's, let's see, about maybe 6 feet long. Maybe was about an inch or so, an inch and a half in diameter. And he wound a coil. He wound a helical coil on it and was using it on, basically on 10 meters, getting on 10 meters. And it was spotted, believe it or not. You would never believe they'd spot it, but they spotted it, and they told you better remove it or else. I've heard this a number of times. They are become extremely strict. They even told us now you can't even have any more hanging plants out on the patio deck outside the on your outside the doorway of the apartment, you know, on the deck. No more hanging plants. People have little clotheslines. They want to hang some clothes out. All that has to be removed. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this, Mel. What are you allowed to have on your balcony outside of an apartment? And whatever that object is that you're allowed to have on the balcony, maybe it's just a chair, a piece of furniture, are there ways of making that into an antenna that you know of? Back to you, Mel.
Basically, just porch furniture, basic porch furniture. I guess a table, small table and chairs, I guess they wouldn't object to. But, I guess you have to start figuring out how to load up the chairs or something. Or use metal chairs, beach chairs. But, you know, to reel out things and all, that means it has to be done really at night. They are so goddarn cautious now. They've become real pains now that they have more restrictions now than ever. The boards are just become impossible because I can tell you an experience or two I've had recently, which I never had previously, but all of a sudden these new rules now are so ridiculous that I think they're going to start listening to your voice level pretty soon, tell you how many dBs you're permitted to talk in the apartment. Over.
Are they allowed to have a picnic table with an umbrella over it? I think you see where I'm going on this one. Go ahead, Mel.
Oh, absolutely not. No umbrellas. That I remember specifications. No umbrellas, no hanging plants, no umbrellas of any sort, you know, or anything like that. Years ago, you could literally, people had also little storage, but, you know, they had a limited amount of storage inside the apartment as far as space goes, so they would get these portable storage type enclosures to put one like in the corner of the patio and store certain things in there that maybe for the summer, you know, summer stuff was stored for the winter and vice versa. They made them take them all down, not allowed to have them out on the patio deck anymore. Now they claim it's a because of fire regulations. Over.
Wow. And so I guess for a guy to wheel out an antenna at night and wheel it back in so it's not observable in the daytime, that's kind of a pain in the neck, isn't it, Mel? Particularly on a windy day.
EC2, QAQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, Mel, I can definitely understand, you know, some of the building requirements. They don't want things to fall off the side of the buildings and certainly, you know, and drop down to the bottom and, of course, you know, fire regulations and things. But generally, a temporarily used either a fold-up antenna or something that can clip on, and then after you're done, you know, operation, you unclip it and bring it back in. I can't see how that would be violating any regulations because as long as they're always being removed, they have really nothing to complain about. I think it's only like permanent type of installations or things that are there, you know, day after day that they can possibly make that complaint for.
In the case of that helical wound antenna that was on a white piece of tubing, that white piece of tubing, of course, shows up very loudly. Had that been some darker color, I wonder if you would have possibly been able to get away with that. Back to you, Mel.
Oh, no, but they are watching extremely carefully the whatever anyone is doing. Their warning went around that you are not permitted to do, you know, any kind of hanging out the window balloons or clothes or whatever you can come up with. And they scrutinize now, I could say, what's on the patio decks and all. And yeah, I guess you could, you know, try something like that, reeling out at something at night. I would suggest you can't do it during the daytime, but that makes it very restrictive, you know, of when you can get on the air. If it gets spotted, you're going to have problems now. You don't want to get involved with the board because they can make your life just a misery. So this is a situation now. I've been hearing this over and over again. People that were operating, my friend Jack was operating up at Co-op City. Things have changed drastically up there, and he had his dipole basically stretched between his patio deck and the window on one side, window on the other, and I would hardly know how. I couldn't almost see it. Somebody turned them in, and he had to remove it and with a warning that the next time it's going to be dire consequences. Over.
KC2MDP.
MDP, go ahead.
Yeah, just a curious one here. You know, if you have a big enough window, how about the, you know, that I don't know if they still even make it, the old alarm tape, you know, that foil-backed alarm tape, you know, just tape it to the window and, you know, use one of those alarm connections there to, you know, connect your feed line to. Or how about just using the window frame itself? Back to you if it's metal window frame or aluminum. Back to you.
That's not bad, Steve. Some guys have got, some people have in their apartment a fairly large picture window and aluminum tape put around the perimeter of that window could be made into an antenna that wouldn't show. That's one solution. Also, if through the wall sockets that are in the apartment, if any of them fall near a metal girder of the building itself, and you can connect a wire to that girder, with the right kind of impedance matching device, you can launch RF energy into the I-beams or the H-beams of the building itself. And they certainly don't show. I didn't say it's easy, but I know it's possible. Every chunk of metal can, if you're smart enough, be made into an antenna with the right kind of a tuning assembly. K2KEY, K2RIW.
KC2QAQ.
I wonder if you've known of anybody who's actually done that, Glenn.
Oh, absolutely, Dick. I guess my question is really for Mel. In other words, are the antennas that they're really complaining about things that are, you know, permanently mounted there day after day, or things that are portable? I can't believe that they could complain about something that even if you're using it during the daytime, as soon as you're done, you roll it back in or you fold it back up and bring it back inside the apartment again, that anybody can make a complaint because you're really not violating any kind of codes or covenants and things like that with the apartment. My question for you, Mel, is are these permanently mounted antennas that are being left out there, or are these antennas that they're actually bringing back in when they're done?
I bet you Mel's going to tell us that some of these homeowner associations are so enthusiastic that if they can see it any time during the day, they're going to complain. Am I correct, Mel?
Actually, any violations of any kind, that's the way the clause is. In fact, one particular situation that happened, it's almost comical, but They had a party, a birthday party, and they tied these metallic balloons onto the railing, just so I guess people that came and coming there would see which, you know, the that there was a party or whatever. They were called right away from the office within a short period that those balloons immediately have to be removed, that they consider them a hazard, eyesore, whatever. But they were told that immediately removal of the balloons that were just hung out there for the day for a kid's birthday party over.
My goodness, that's strict. If somebody knew that they're going to encounter this ahead of time when they sign up for the apartment, I bet you they wouldn't go for it. Of course, these things happen downrange after you've lived there for a while and you like the place, except for that. I'm being led to believe, with what I'm hearing, Mel, that in some of these extreme cases, you're down to lighting up the girders of the building itself. And I know that that's possible. As I said, I didn't say it's easy. It's going to take some experimentation. But I guarantee there are ways of making the girders of the building RF active. I wonder if anyone within the sound of my voice knows of cases where that has been done. Give me your call letters, KQLIW.
KC2QIQ.
Tell us about it, Mel. I mean, Glenn.
Going back a few years to my college days, we used to have carrier current radio systems that were located in all the dorms. So basically, we would have a remote telephone connection to each one of the dorms, and the carrier currents used to basically drive into the AC wall outlets with an inductor capacitive coupling, and you could basically resonate the wall outlet. Here again, this could be you can make matching networks to tune just about anything. You can tune a bed spring to a panel, as long as basically your wire gauges are correct and your antenna tuner has enough range. You can use basically any of the really good MFJ tuners with the open wire end tuners, and you can tune in pretty well. It's amazing. I mean, and especially if you have height, if you're at the higher levels in an apartment, it's amazing what you can load up. Unfortunately, I think you may wind up with some TBI problems in your that might be a separate problem, though. KC2QIQ.
WB2HWW.
How we recognize? I'd be very reluctant, just as you're hinting, Glenn, of using the 110-volt wiring, because that wiring is directly connected to your neighbor's television set, and the chances of getting television interference are extremely high. I'd much rather prefer to use the girders of the building than the 110-volt wiring. Let's see what Howie's got to say, and Howie, how would you solve this problem?
Back in my days when I was on the low band, novice and whatever, I used to tune up the fire escape, and I've also loaded up into the wall. I had a coil capacitor. I even had a max box. I was able to do that. We did that back in the 60s, kid.
Okay, there's a couple of good suggestions. Load up the fire escape and load up the water pipes in the building. Definitely doable. And these things go to a long distance, both of them. And even though they're not the right resonant length, one or two connections of wires to them that are hidden and don't show, grab on the right spot with the right kind of impedance matching network, I'm fairly sure that in most cases that can be made into an antenna at HF frequencies. It's going to take a lot of experimenting to do it. The one thing that worries me is that will you have to drill a hole in the wall to get access to a beam of the building? Or can you find those beams by going through the opening up the wall outlet sockets? So you're probably more familiar with the way these buildings are constructed than I am. Mel, how difficult do you think would it be to attach a wire to a girder of the building? K2KEY, K2RIW.
Can I make it up? What is doing?
Now, wait a minute. Well, yeah, this is K2KEY. Just in and out. Oh, I didn't get really your comment. It is difficult, Dick. The walls are concrete. just to hang a picture in the apartment, I got to bring my hammer drill, literally, and put a wall plug in. You're not going to be able to get to things like girders and that. In fact, in the co-op we have, if I take my handy talkie inside there, I don't really get out too well. I can't hit them. Most of the repeaters, I can't even hear them or work them. The building is, like I say, a pretty good Faraday shield. So I can't see how you're going to do really any kind of tapping into walls and all there. Even with my HF radio, my portable radio on HF a couple times, not to have boredom, you know, sitting there sometimes. We're there and visiting. I took my radio along, and I can't hear any of the HF bands to speak of. The noise level is phenomenally high, so... The only thing I can, like I say, contemplate is trying to run a sneak wire along the bricks some way outside, and that's about the best thing I can think of, and take pot luck over.
KC2, QIQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Mel, I have an idea here. I mean, I've done stuff like this before, and I'm not sure, I've never done it at the altitude of an apartment level, of an apartment building. But I'd be pretty sure that if you took a tuner like an MFJ, like 989D, and you were to take the wire tuning side and attach one side of the open wire tuning feed and take like something like a 12-gauge wire or a, you know, 14-gauge wire from there, something along that line, attach one side to the center of a electrical wall outlet, a well-grounded one, and then flip the other side and attach it over to a cold water pipe from somewhere in the plumbing, the inside plumbing, underneath one of the sinks, and then just randomly run the wire back to one of those random wire tuners. And I'm sure you're going to have something. It may not be perfect or ideal, but it's got to be better than nothing.
Oh, like I say, thank God I haven't to face this problem, but I know people that are living there that have posed this problem to me a number of times. And inside the apartment, the noise level is phenomenal. This I can agree that you can't seem to do anything inside the apartment. The noise levels in that building are terrible. And it's, like I say, a Faraday shield, basically. The only chance, if you can, the ones that did have the wire outside temporarily had wires outside or type of helical thing on the windowsill and all, were able to get out. I mean, they were on the air. Worked them many of the times. They'd join us, you know, on 10-meter net in the morning. And now I've been put out of business, to tell you the truth. So the only thing I could suggest is got to be a stealth type of wire. And that's why I questioned what color and what gauge makes the most invisibility, Dick, over.
What are all the colors of the enameled wire you have seen? Red, green, and brown. I think those are the main colors we've seen in enameled wire. And when it comes to wire covered with rubber, I guess you can get any color in the world. But, and should you use rubber-covered wire or enameled wire? I think enameled wire is a lot smaller in diameter, and therefore potentially can become more invisible. What do you think, Mel?
I don't know how long it'll last outside. There's the problem, you know, rubbing against the bricks or anything like that. I have suggested, you know, if you take telephone wire, that they run along the baseboard, that white wire inside there, there's four wires. There's a red, a black, I think a green, and one other color, what, a yellow or something. I think that's what's in there. So that's number 22 wire. That's easily to obtain. And I thought maybe you took the red piece, you know, strip out a piece of red colored wire like that, number 22, that has that insulation on it and all, maybe up against the red brick, you know, just tacked from window to window, it would be basically, I would think, is as invisible as you can possibly come up with. But, I hate to suggest anything to these people and get them into any kind of problems, to tell you the truth, Dick. So that's why I threw it out on the net here, where I've been posed this question so many times already, and I haven't been able to come up with something I could say, well, I think if you do this, you should be able to get away with it. Over.
I sure wish PRB1 had been adopted by New York State. There's quite a few states in the United States that have put something on their state rules that essentially is the wording of PRB1. Because for a radio amateur to be denied all access to antennas and therefore transmitting and receiving seems a bit unfair, seems a bit un-American. And right now, I know that there's a fairly liberal tower law for the five boroughs of New York City, but I guess there is no equivalent of PRB1 yet, and it looks like we're not going to get one in the very near future. Back to you, Mel, K2LIW.
Roger. Yeah, this is K2KEY. It's a big problem here. Very, very big problem. And compounding now, well, I guess they put off this. The HDTV bit has been forestalled off because of the problem. One of the problems there that the reception in certain places around here is very critical. And if you look at with an indoor antenna, with analog TV, you know, you can, for these people there are satisfied. I personally couldn't look if I had to sit and watch a TV program with the reception I see with the flickering and the snowy and this and the ghost. I don't know how possibly they enjoy anything, but listen, I understand their situation. A lot of these older folks, God bless them, you know, this is their little bit of entertainment. And the guy that I know that was going around with the KOD boxes, he just says, I don't know what to do. They just will not work at all to speak of. I don't think he says he could get two channels on the whole situation. He tried every kind of different indoor antennas. He tried this and that. I think he gave up on the situation. He was a volunteer in a program, Dick, over.
W2 blank, go ahead. Repeat your call letters softly and slowly, and then not your name, and then go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, hi, it's Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu. It's Rich. I'm the guy on floor 30 in the middle of Manhattan. And I was looking into this TAC antenna, whatever it's called. Does anybody know about that? Have they heard about that? It's two spirals of wire or whatever it is forming a dipole, a 40-meter dipole that could be tuned on other bands. And I was thinking of maybe getting one of those and putting it right up against the big picture window up here on 400 feet above the ground. Go ahead.
Yeah, that sounds like it's worth a try. I wonder if you've heard about that antenna, Mel.
A TAC antenna. I've seen it advertised. Know of a few people that have tried it. It basically, it looks like you would take let's take a 20-meter one version. He's got a number of versions of them, and he's got a little like a sort of a stick between two spirals. In other words, if you look at it, it looks like a like a spider spun this antenna. You know, it's like a spiral, starting in the middle and spiraling out like in a coil effect, Dick. Two of them, and they form a dipole, over.
So these are not two slinkies. These are two spider webs as the capacitive top hats on a helical wound antenna. Is that essentially what it is, Mel? And so I guess some of your guys from the Kings County Radio Club have tried the 20-meter version, and were they moderately happy with it? Go ahead.
What it looks like, if you took a piece of wire and you just wound it in a flat coil, not in a helical, just a flat, in other words, laid it flat on a table, not in the middle, say, drove a nail into a piece of board in the middle, and then wound, started, you know, making coils around and going out until you used up all the wire. You made two of them and put them on the opposite side of a piece of boom, you could call it. That's basically how it looks, Dick. It's like two flat spirals on both sides, over.
Okay, so it's like the sticky portion of a spider web. Not the radial spokes, which are the strength members, and then that sticky. But the spiral, it's a cavity back spiral without the cavity backing. Okay, I see how that can work, and I think it's got to work. It falls into the so-called infinitesimal dipole. As long as you're using low loss, low resistivity materials, an extremely small dipole, however you made it small, by a fancy loading network or a distributed thing like you're just describing, it's got to have essentially dipole gain. You can't make an antenna, no matter how small it is, you can't make it below isotropic, and when you include the antenna pattern, you really can't get much below a dipole. As you take a full-size dipole on 80 meters, 132 feet long, and you keep squeezing it smaller and smaller, maybe zigzagging it a little bit, but you got a fancy impedance matching network, by the time you get that 132-foot long antenna down to about 10 foot of length, and you properly impedance match that, you'll only lose half a dB of gain compared to the full-size dipole. I know that's hard to believe, but as long as you make it out of low resistivity materials, you got to get dipole gain. And therefore, this antenna, by all the laws of physics that I know about, should work. And my guess is you guys haven't done a shootout with that antenna yet. Is that true, Mel? K2KEY, K2LIW?
Well, the only thing that I've made once for a friend of mine also had a similar situation, lived in New York City, dying to get on the air. We made that one, that loop, that transmitting loop, receiving transmitting loop. I remember I described it out of copper pipe, basically all out of water pipe, L-type of copper pipe. I think it was three-quarter diameter copper pipe using 33-degree elbows and 45-degree elbows and, you know, all that kind of stuff, putting it together. And made a stand for it and all, and in fact, he took it home, had to take the torch home with him so that he could sit and put it together, because he took it home literally in pieces, and made a 20-meter version for him. And the method of tuning it, of course, being, you know, it's a somewhat critical tuning, but we came up with a very novel way of tuning it, and he put it out on this little... his little deck out there, this little patio thing he's got out on where he lives. There's two people out there. It was crowded. He stuck it out there, and it worked out quite well. In fact, what he did to make it more stealth, he painted it completely black, and he says it seemed like, you know, this way it wouldn't shine. So that's the closest I've come to some of these so-called, you know, types of antennas of... Well, this is another version of a TAC antenna, but yeah, I guess maybe you could put it out on the patio deck there and all, and just, you know, on the table, and look like, make it look like a turnstile or something, maybe a Lazy Susan or something, and paint it black over.
Good evening, WHCDO.
Andy recognized. I think the best thing that Rich has in his favor is a large picture window that looks to the north and the northeast, I think it is. Andy, how would you solve a stealth antenna problem?
Good question. I just turned the radio on. I wanted to ask you a different question. I know it's late. I just got home. A stealth antenna. I guess something with green wire to camouflage so you wouldn't see it. Is that the question? How do you make a stealth? Or what would you do to make it stealth? I think Mel already did that, right? Using ground wire, so it blends in with the foliage.
Yeah, as long as you got a tree out front, that's great. Quite a few of the people writing emails to Mel are living in apartments where the homeowners association will not allow them to put anything on the balcony of their apartment, not allow them to hang anything outside the house. So they got some pretty tough requirements. Go ahead with your question, Andy.
Okay, it's unrelated to antennas, but it is related in a certain way. I wonder if you've ever seen this problem. Although I've seen it before, but I didn't realize it. Here we go. I just had a new radio room built for myself.
place that I'm going to be doing my operating. And what I did was I put in a suspended ceiling in the basement. Looks really nice. And little did I realize, it just didn't even occur to me. In the suspended ceiling, I installed fluorescent lighting. Regular, you know, suspended ceiling fluorescent lights that you buy at Home Depot. In fact, that's where it was bought. But little did I realize how much interference these lights are creating. It is tremendous. It is so bad, I'm going to have to do something alternative to solve this problem. And it's funny because while I was doing the work, I was doing electrical wiring, putting outlets and other things, I plugged in my little cheap stereo system so I could listen to some music so I can relax while I'm doing some work. And I noticed on the radio, I'm receiving a hum, a 120 cycle hum, which is sort of masking the music that I'm hearing at times. It comes and goes. So, tuning around the dial on the FM band, if I tune off the station to the side of the station, like the sideband of the station, I notice that the hum gets louder. I said, sounds like the filter caps in this thing are going bad. It's resembling that. Also, along with the hum, there's a buzzing sound, like a static, constant static. It fades, but you can hear it. I said, wait a minute, where's this noise coming from? I really didn't pay that close attention in the beginning because I was listening to the radio and the music, and then all of a sudden I became aware. I said, this is not normal. What's going on? Well, I said, let me make sure it's not my radio, that there's something else causing it. Sure enough, I turn off the fluorescent lights and the hum disappears completely and everything clears up. So what I did was, well, let me let it drop. I took my spectrum analyzer and just connected a telescopic whip to the analyzer in the room. And sure enough, my noise floor is about minus 65 with not spikes, but broadband noise with spikes that it looks like it's synchronized to the line. I have to do a line sync on the analyzer to lock it in. Spectrum analyzer is in my service monitor, and it's a cheap, the cheap analyzer doesn't have line sync and things like that. I'm going to have to bring out the other one, the better one. Anyway, bottom line is, I turn off the lights, and the noise floor goes down to minus 95, minus 100, where it's supposed to be. Turn on the light, jumps up to minus 65, saying, wow. Okay, where is it coming from? Is it being radiated from the bulb itself, or is it coming in on the line? So what I did was, by the way, I took the spectrum analyzer and I changed the frequency all the way from zero, which is, I think it stops at 100 kc, something very low, and I just started increasing the frequency all the way, and that noise continued and peaked around 115, 120 megs, and then after that point, it started to decrease slowly, but the noise extended outward to about 270 megs. After that point, it was just barely noticeable down in the noise. That's pretty broadbanded. Again, turning the lights off cleared it up completely. These are regular recessed fluorescent lights that go into the suspended ceilings that you can put in. So the last thing I did, just to see how much noise is being generated or where it's coming from, I have a loop antenna with a little broadband preamp that I use for direction finding. It's got a little AM detector with headphones. Sure enough, I take the loop and I hold it under the plastic lens of the light, and that noise
that hum that I was hearing on an FM station comes in loud and clear. In fact, it peaks on one side of the, I moved the loop from end to end on the fluorescent light fixture. It peaks on one side of the fluorescent light fixture. Seems like that's where the power supply, the switching power supply, is located. So, I have three lights. One is much louder as far as amplitude is concerned just by hearing it than the others. I also took the loop and I put it to the, I put a circuit breaker panel in. Went over to the circuit breaker panel and I do hear that noise, but much lower. I do hear it when I touch the loop to the vortex going into the circuit breaker panel box. I can hear that noise in static. That noise, that, you know, sounds like a 120 cycle tone. Anyway, now I'm debating to myself, what's my next move? Because I need to solve this problem. I need to quiet this thing down. I wonder if they actually make a low radiation type light fixture that will not cause all this interference, because this is really bad. What do you think, Dick? Any ideas? And have you seen this one before?
2EO, Dick.
Yeah, you've already seen this one, Andy, when you made those measurements in the subway. There you were looking at the UHF characteristic, but that 4 foot long tube of that fluorescent light is a plasma, and that plasma is being struck and unstruck 120 times per second, and by definition that plasma is a broadband negative impedance radiator, and it falls off 6 dB per octave from some frequency. But I don't think you're going to quiet down that fluorescent lighting. Even if you had a solid-state ballast, you're just going to move it to a different frequency where it peaks, but it's still going to keep doing it. Other than going over to incandescent lighting, and that's not going to be anywhere near as efficient. And by the way, we're going to be cut off in about 1 minute. So make it brief, Rich. N2EO.
EC2QAQ.
Thank you.
Hey, Dick, I have fluorescent lighting in my ham shack. I have four fixtures. I don't have that problem. I don't know why.
If you have real good shielding of the coax cable and the antenna is far removed outside, that's one solution. Glenn?
LED lighting, Andy. LED lighting. You can get the bulbs, look around for them, and they're really quiet and really efficient.
Tell them how to modify the ceiling unit.
You got a suggestion on that one, Mel? Go ahead.
The Radio Shack had the same problem. I bought those drop-in lights boxes. They're 2 foot square. They got a U-shaped fluorescent tube in there, and I could do nothing with them. Had that problem right away. And, oh, my God. Took those fluorescent, those light boxes out, and I went over to Home Depot, got opaque, you know, 2 foot square opaque replacement panels. You know, this drop ceiling comes in either 2 foot square or the 2 foot panels, whatever. I have 2 foot square panels. Put the opaque ones in and put regular incandescent bulbs in. High efficiency lamps, but I just put two, I put three placers in.
Sorry, it's not gonna work. I'm trying to get it back on.